Coach P's perspective.
Serve God, work hard, family coaching, play my part. Faith is something that I use every day, game changing moves. Sit back, relax, and listen. Inspiration is my mission. Twitch, got your back, Coach 96. We do got your back. PCO be in my brain, CSL is in my veins. Ain't no stopping or no blocking. Heaven's where I aim. In order to succeed, we cannot be lazy. Repping Jesus all the time, and yeah, we're going crazy.
Hey fam and friends, hey, welcome to Coach P's Perspective, where coaching, inspiration, and faith collide. This is your host, Coach Chad Parks, and thank you for joining me today. I'm a college All-American wrestler, coach, and the author of the best-selling book, Game Changing Moves. This background has allowed me to train elite athletes, coaches, and high performers from all walks of life. So if you need a pick-me-up, a kick in the pants, or a coach in your corner, I got you right here on Coach P's Perspective. Let's go. Hey, before we get started, I want to tell you about my favorite nutrition program, Champion Athletes. As an athlete, whether at the middle school, high school, collegiate, or professional level, you have special nutritional needs, and these vary depending on your sport and energy requirements. Nutrition and ideal body composition play an essential role in achieving your performance goals and maximizing your success. At Champion Athletes, certified experts in sports nutrition develop individualized plans for the student, amateur, and professional athlete. Their sports nutrition programs will optimize your diet and nutrition so that you can achieve your ideal body composition and maximize your performance. Here's what I love. Each program is tailored to meet your specific needs through a comprehensive assessment, continuous reevaluation, and one-on-one coaching. So whether you're just starting out, maybe you're an amateur athlete, or you have elite status, the Champion Athlete Sports Nutrition Programs will help you reach your maximum potential. Programs are available nationwide. And for us, if you are a listener of Coach P's Perspective, you'll receive a $50 discount for the initial program if you use the code COACHP. Their website is champions-athletes.com. So be sure to check out the website. You can also look at their Instagram page, which is at championathletes. I'll have those links in the show notes. Go check out my friends at Champion Athletes to get your nutrition right, to reach your maximum potential and performance. If today's message motivates you, inspires you, moves you into action, then please share this with somebody via social media, text, whatever works for you. You could also give us a rating or review on iTunes. And last but not least, be sure to check out my book, Game Changing Moves, Life Lessons from the Locker Room and Beyond. You can pick it up right now on Amazon or go to my publisher, crosstrainingpublishing.com. All right, y'all, let's jump into today's episode. All right, hey, welcome to another episode of Coach P's Perspective. Man, I am pumped. Today I have Steven Sashin on here, who is the founder, CEO of Zero Shoes, which are my favorite shoes. I'm actually wearing some right now, the Zero Prio, which is my everyday go-to training shoe and teaching and coaching and everything else. Steven, you are, you know, looking at your backgrounds, I would say like a man of many talents, many trades.
I would say a guy who was, who they hadn't invented Ritalin for yet.
All right. Well, you've been able to utilize that very, very well.
So, and by the way, I've got to say, here's the irony. You're wearing a pair of our shoes. This is what I'm wearing.
You know what? Before we start recording, I was going to ask you, because I would almost guarantee that you were probably barefooted.
You know, let's just say I'm barefoot so often that the other day I was in Costco, I was in line at the pharmacy. And when I wear shoes, I wear mismatched colors so people notice. So okay. I'm wearing shoes and the guy behind me says, "Hey, your shoes don't match." And the pharmacist says, "He's wearing shoes."
Yeah, nice. Yeah. So, well, I know that is a big part of, you know, the minimal shoe movement and no shoe. We're going to get into that in a little bit, which is awesome. By the way, that's a great marketing technique, wearing the mismatched shoes so people notice.
Yeah, I do what I can.
Brilliant. So, all right, man. Well, let's just do this for those who are listening who have not been exposed to your awesome company yet. Let's start with your background. Where'd you grow up at? And I have a lot of coaches that listen to this. So maybe some of the sports that you did. I know you're a sprinter, but maybe some of the stuff growing up.
So I grew up in Bethesda, Maryland, just outside of DC. And I was always, you know, just like the fastest kid anyone knew for quite a while kindergarten, elementary school, kind of stuff. When I was seven, I became a competitive diver. And I did that for 4 or 5 years. And then kind of, this is going to sound silly, at 11 or 12, I burned out. I just was just sort of tired of the whole game. And when I went to my first day at the middle school, the junior high school that I was at, the PE guys, there were three of them. They were doing some talk to all the incoming students about whatever we had to do, and we had to wear a jock strap and don't put it on your head or whatever they were saying. And then without saying anything, one of the coaches, one of the teachers stands up very quietly, just stands behind the other two guys, does a standing backflip. And my next thought was, I want to be that guy. So this is a guy named Jack Leonard. He was a like 5-time national and 3-time world tumbling champion, All-American gymnast at Ohio State, one of the greatest teachers of all kinds I've ever met. He's one of these guys who could figure out what you were good at and then just maximized what you could do. Quick aside, like years after we graduated high school, I said to him, how many other people did you ever teach this one particular move to, a move that I did? He goes, nobody. I said, what do you mean? He goes, you were the one who could do it. Mm-hmm. And it was true. And he also didn't tell me that the year that I did it, three guys died trying it. So he was kind of very smart that way. Actually, wait, sorry. I had the craziest memory. So my senior year in high school, I was working with another coach as well. Like, you know, for evenings, a guy had a gym somewhere else. And one night Jack was at this gym with us training with this other coach. And the other coach just like read me the riot act about all the things I couldn't do. And he said, you know, you don't twist well, you don't do this. I mean, just like had a whole list of things. And I remember walking into the locker room and just started crying. And Jack says, so you need to know something. I said, what? He goes, he's right. I said, what? He goes, yeah, you can't do those things. You're not good at those things. But why did your scores go from 7s to 9.5s? Because here's the things you're awesome at. These are the things that nobody else can do. You're not wired for those. That's why we don't do those. And I mean, that just changed my life. So anyway, that said, I was an All-American gymnast in high school. I also was running track. And by the time I was maybe in 10th, 11th grade, I'm not sure which, I was getting shin splints, and the track coach, and I'm going to use that word with air quotes, the track coach, he was a science teacher who they made coach track, who knew nothing about coaching track. He said to me, so is there any time when the shin splints don't hurt? I go, yeah, when I'm running. He goes, well, then keep running. And I remember thinking, you're a moron. So I stopped sprinting and I started doing pole vault and long jump, which I did well at. And then EGANs. After that, then I moved to college, went off to college. I stopped doing gymnastics because I wanted to have a life. And I don't know what the hell I was doing after that, but I basically, I still kept doing gymnastics casually. Like I went to Duke, they had a women's team, but they didn't have a men's team. So I would work out with the women's team and their coach. Again, coach. Now he was actually a fine coach, but I'm putting air quotes around that one. Because on the first day, I said, do me a favor, I'm going to do this one particular move and you just stand there in case something goes wrong. And he ended up trying to spot me. And I ended up landing in a way that I just pulled like all the muscles in my lower back. I might've broken my spine at that time. I spent the next 2 weeks in bed on Vicodin and codeine. And years later, we were still friends. And I said, what were you thinking? He says, I was thinking, I've never heard of anyone on the planet who can do that move. So I thought you were just bullshitting me. So I was trying to get in there so you wouldn't kill yourself. And I screwed up. And so it's like, oops, live and learn. And then anyway, I kept doing gymnastics just casually till I was about 32 when I blew out my knee. And then I spent 15 years or 13 years trying to find something to do that I enjoyed until someone said to me, you know, there's a master's track and field circuit. And I went, no, I did not know that. And so that's what got me back into sprinting when I was 45, which is 14 years ago. And here we are.
Yeah, that's awesome, man. It's amazing. I love it. So I'm a wrestling coach, lifelong wrestler, college wrestler. But tell you what, a lot of my wrestlers, they naturally can do some tumbling. But when we get somebody that comes in with a tumbling background, their athleticism, their strength, their flexibility, their kinesthetic awareness is just off the charts.
Yeah, gymnastics is it's super, super wonderful. And I don't know one gymnast who hasn't come out with, you know, something massively messed up. For me, it was my shoulder and my back.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. So, all right. Well, it's a great background. Now, let's jump over to Zero Shoes, your company. I want to know, like, the genesis. Where did this idea start? How did it get off the ground? So tell me about the beginning days.
Well, again, it started because I got back into sprinting at 45 and I spent the next 2 years just getting injured pretty much constantly. And a friend of mine who's a world champion cross country runner said one day, why don't you try running barefoot and see if you learn anything? And what I learned in short, was why I was getting injured and how to stop getting injured. And the gist is, it was a form problem that I couldn't feel when I was in a shoe that, you know, essentially looked like this big padded motion control, arch support, kind of normal shoe. And when you're running barefoot, bad form hurts, good form feels great. And so I wanted that natural movement experience as much as I could have it, because I felt the benefit of it. So I made a pair of sandals based on a 10,000-year-old design, just something to protect the bottom of your foot, something to hold it on your foot. I got some rubber from a shoe repair place. I got some cord from Home Depot, laced it up onto my foot, and that was it. And I made a pair for my wife, who kind of patted me on the head. It's like buying your mother a baseball glove for Mother's Day, and she didn't know what the hell I was talking about. And I had a few other pairs that I made for some other runners. And then they told two friends and they told two friends, and I'd made about maybe 50 pairs of shoes. And a guy who was a barefoot running coach said, I have a book coming out on barefoot running. And if you had a website to treat this hobby of yours, this sandal making hobby, like an actual business, I could put you in the book. So I rush home. I pitch this incredible opportunity to my wife, who assures me it's a stupid idea that won't make any money, is a giant waste of time. And I said, yeah, you're probably right. So I waited till she went to bed before I built a website. And she kind of growled at me the next day. And I said, look, we were starting a search engine marketing business. I'd been an internet marketer for a long time. And I said, it'll be a case study. We can just show, it'll take like 3 months. I'll be able to dominate this market. And I was totally wrong. It only took me about 6 weeks. And what we thought might maybe be a car payment, if we were lucky, instantly and very quickly, that's kind of redundant, became our full-time job. By January 2010, we were, you know, all in. And again, selling a do-it-yourself sandal-making kit. And we started the business during a recession in the winter. And I think our first order was from someone in Minnesota, where it was already snowing. And we thought, wow, somebody from Minnesota is ordering a pair of sandals, a kit, a DIY kit. Then there's a there to this. And soon thereafter, we were walking downtown in Boulder, Colorado, where I've been living, or where I was living. And a pack of teenage girls ran up to us and said, oh my God, those sandals are sick. Where do you get those? And it's like, hey, we got it. So we knew that there was going to be something meaningful there. And that's how it all began.
Yeah, which is an incredible story. You know, there's been a big movement, of course, right, with minimalist shoes or barefoot running and barefoot shoes, yeah, those types of things. I'm pretty sure that exact same book that you were mentioning is the one that made me start looking that direction. And as a coach, I do wrestling, but I'm also a strength conditioning coach. And so I'm always looking at things, right? Hey, how can we move better, essentially? And so kind of started to try to discover those type of things.
Let me say something about that.
Yeah.
And I'll sum it up with this. There's a doctor at Harvard named Irene Davis. We were at a panel discussion together at the American College of Sports Medicine. I was on the panel. And she asked the other panelists, which included someone from Brooks and Adidas, was basically, in the 60s and up until then, we were running in thin-soled running shoes. We were playing basketball in Chuck Taylors. We weren't getting the kind of injuries or the severity of injuries or the number of injuries we're seeing now. So she says, what problem were you trying to solve and why didn't it work? And they had no answer. So the thing we've got to remember is that what we're doing at Zero Shoes is fundamentally what human beings have been doing since the beginning of human beings and footwear. And the advent of, you know, the modern athletic shoe is the new invention, is the new intervention. And they have no proof. And by no proof, I mean no proof that it's beneficial. In fact, when I'm just holding something up, it's like, you know, if your foot is shaped like this toe box, this pointy toe box, it's not supposed to be. And it's only shaped like that because you've been squeezing your toes into something like that. And if you think about it, like from strength and conditioning, if you're going to drop and do push-ups, you don't squeeze your fingers together until you can't use them. You spread them apart because that gives you better balance and strength. Well, it's the same thing with your feet. So it's an amazing thing that what we're coming back to is what humans were doing for a very long time. And now, you know, people act like we're the new thing. It's like, no. We're the old thing, just done better.
Yeah. Yeah, a lot of functional fitness and functional strength conditioning in general is going back to some of these basic human principles that have been practiced for a long time that we have forgotten or neglected, or just said like, hey, here's the new modern better thing. So we jump to it, right? Yeah. So it's going in a great direction.
Well, there's even more to it. Like the padded arch supported. Well, let me back up. There's some research that I call the dumbest research ever done. And the dumbest research ever done is basically proving use it or lose it. So when it comes to footwear, there's research showing that just walking, wait, I'm going to grab a zero shoe, just walking in a shoe like this, they didn't do the study with this shoe, but they did a study with, you know, a different brand, but walking in a truly minimalist shoe that's flexible and lets your foot bend and flex and feel naturally builds intrinsic foot muscle strength as much as doing a foot strengthening exercise program. And, you know, as a wrestler, or, you know, even if you're benching, if you're squatting, if you're pulling, you know, everything starts at the feet. And so having that foot strength is important. And again, we had to do research to prove that using your feet is good. Well, similarly, there's research showing they put the arch support in the shoes of healthy individuals. And within 12 weeks, they had lost 17% of the muscle mass in their feet. Really, do we need to prove the lose it part of use it or lose it? We all know you put your arm in a cast, it doesn't magically come out stronger. So, you know, it's an amazing thing to see that what's going on is just this rewiring of people's brains. Because here's the crazy thing about, like, let's use cushioning. So the research on cushioning is very interesting and very clear. It doesn't help. Simply doesn't help. The more cushioning, the better. It's not true. More cushioning is actually often worse, because you end up using the cushioning or trying to, and it's never going to be as good as your muscles, ligaments, and tendons. But the shoe companies for the last 50 years, every couple of years, they come out and say, hey, here's our new magic cushioning technology. And everyone goes, I'm in. And it's like the boy who cried wolf, except they're crying cushioning. But in the boy who cried wolf, the villagers eventually got smart. And in the shoe companies that cried cushioning, the villagers seem to keep going back every time they say, here's our new thing. And the shoe companies have never said, by the way, our apologies for the crap we've been selling up until now.
Yeah, absolutely. And I can tell you, as someone who transitioned to a minimalist zero drop shoe a long time ago, I've tried to go back and wear cushioning shoes or shoes that I can't. Like, it's, yeah, it, yeah, it feels so uncomfortable. It feels so unnatural. You know, it's not something.
Only because it is unnatural and it is uncomfortable.
Your company's done phenomenal. So I want to talk about two things real quick. I want to ask you about marketing, because I believe that principles are principles. Once you know them, you can apply them to multiple places. Tell me a little bit about marketing and how you grow the company. And then I'll also love to hear, like, your vision for Zero Shoes.
Oh, that's a big one. So the marketing thing is ultimately pretty simple. Part one is finding people who might be amenable to what you're doing. People are already talking about what you're doing, and offer something of value to them. When I started the company, I just made videos showing how to make these sandals from a do-it-yourself sandal making kit. And I gave away the whole farm. I showed people how to replicate my business, and a handful of people actually did. But I literally just gave it all away. And I had people who came up to me years later saying, you know, I watched your videos. I made my own shoes. I've never bought anything from you. I said, great. I mean, the most important thing for me is spreading the word about natural movement and the value of natural movement. So if you got benefit from that, I'm all in. In fact, someone said, what would happen if, you know, the big shoe companies did what you're doing? I said, then I won. I'm trying to convince people that natural movement is the better, obvious, healthy choice. If everyone else copies what I've done, I won. So that's part one in terms of marketing, is just finding where people are already gathering and talking and interacting about what you're doing, and just kind of engaging in the conversation, offering some value or some entertainment. Entertainment can be value as well. The second thing is that, you know, you got to go past the people who already are hip to what you're doing to a new group of people, if what you're doing applies to them. And so when people ask me, you know, who do you make your shoes for? I go, people with feet, preferably two, but not required. And that's kind of an inside joke, because we have a bunch of military guys who are like single leg amputees who wear our shoes on their prosthetic and on their regular foot, which I find very entertaining. And so to go to that higher level, we're in an interesting situation. Like, most shoe companies just tell the same story as every shoe company. Here's our magic new cushioning. Try this shoe. Well, we're doing the exact opposite. You know, we're saying, here's a wide foot shaped toe box. That kind of makes sense. That's easy for people. Low to the ground for balance and agility. We don't have heel support or toe spring. We don't have a bunch of padding. We're telling the opposite story of what people have been hearing for 50 years. So you can't just say, hey, this is better, because they're going to come up with an argument about why they think this is better, because that's what someone told them. And that's what these multi-billion dollar companies have been promoting. So the only way to market that way is to get people to realize or discover or recognize that what they have been told actually conflicts with what their experience is. So, for example, I say to people, you know, again, the simple one, is this the shape of your foot? They go, no. I go, well, why are you trying to squeeze your foot into something not foot shaped? They go, huh, that doesn't make sense. Or I say, well, think about baby feet. you know, those little things at the end of their pudgy little legs. I go, if when you watch a baby learning how to walk, it's amazing. You can see they're really trying to work how their muscles work in their feet, how their toes work. They're trying to figure out how to get all the muscles and the ligaments and tendons to do all the right things. You can see that they're getting information from what they're stepping on that's going to their brain, and they're trying to get their whole body to function properly. Would you take a baby like that and put something on its foot that made it so it couldn't bend and flex and move its toes, or so that it couldn't feel the ground, or so it elevated its heel and changed its posture? And people go, well, no. I go, well, if you wouldn't do it to a baby, why are you doing it to you?
Yeah.
So there's a bunch of ways of just, or just the simple thing. Remember being a kid and going outside on a warm summer day, and you kick off your shoes and you feel the grass between your toes or the sand under your feet or the water around you, depending on where you are. And you just play. And you did that till your parents dragged you home when it was so dark you couldn't see your hand in front of your face, or, you know, the ball you're trying to kick. It's like, what'd you do for arch support then? Nothing. You were fine. What'd you do for footwear then? Nothing. You were fine. And if you watch little kids running, they have impeccable form. They land with their foot underneath their body. They have just the right amount of lean. They do it with this weird look on their face. I think it's called smiling.
Yeah.
They're having a good time. And you can do that now too. You don't have to just put in the miles. In fact, if you want to know if somebody's running barefoot or in a pair of minimalist shoes, you can spot them from 50 yards away. They don't look like they're having a bad time. And so highlighting these things that let people think about why they're doing what they're doing, and realizing that their own experience argues with the advertising messages they've been taught, kind of wakes people up and gives them the chance to start thinking about it in a way they hadn't before. And that just opens a door that we want to escort them through to show them what we're doing and let them have the experience of natural movement. Oh, now my vision, you asked.
Yes, yes.
We're just trying to change the world. I mean, it's simple. We're trying to help people rediscover that natural movement is the obvious, better, healthy choice, just the way natural food is, the way we think of natural food. And if you're not going to run in zero shoes or a minimalist shoe or barefoot, that's cool. I'm totally fine. If there's certain situations where you don't want to do that, not very many, but if you're going to be one of those people, it's like, I've got to wear this shoe for this thing, great. But when you're not doing that thing, we have sandals and boots and shoes that you can wear off the court, off the field, off the whatever you're doing to, again, hopefully build up that foot muscle strength, get that neural connection between the soles of your feet where you have more nerve endings than anywhere at your fingertips and your lips and your brain, because that helps move your whole body, engage the posterior chain, which you can do better when you're working naturally. It's like, you know, do all these things that are beneficial off the whatever, because that'll carry over onto the whatever. We have professional hockey players who say, I'm skating better than ever because I'm wearing your shoes and sandals when I'm off the court. It's made, or off the court, off the ice. It's made my feet stronger. And that actually translates to when I've got my feet bound up in my skate. And NBA players and WNBA players saying the same thing. Like, my feet have become indestructible from wearing your sandals when I'm not playing. When I'm playing, you know, I'm in basketball shoes. And so the goal is really simple. In a way, let's turn back time to when Irene Davis at Harvard says it best. In the 70s, you couldn't find research on running injuries because there just weren't enough of them.
Yeah.
And there were still a lot of people running, but they weren't getting those injuries because they weren't in shoes that eliminate the ability for your foot to move, that squeeze your toes together, that mess with your posture, that give you cushioning that doesn't work, which means you end up sending a spike of force through your joints. So instead of using your muscles, ligaments, and tendons. So again, you know, my goal is to make the natural movement idea the default, and anything else is the outlier instead of the other way around.
I love it. You know, and it makes so much sense. I mean, you talked about, I mean, basically from the ground up, right? So we're building our foot strength.
Yeah.
Our ankles are going to get stronger. Our knees are going to be more protected. Our hips, our lower back. And those are issues that everyday person deals with, and the athletes often deal with, you know, because of footwear and then the way they train, those type of things. It's funny. I had this thought as you were talking. So when I was in college, we would run every single day during preseason, and I was running in padded shoes, and I would get shin splints really bad every year. And my college wrestling coach was like, hey, I want you to come in here, take off your shoes and start running on the wrestling mats every day. And he's like, I used to do that and it helps. And I don't think either one of us knew why it helped. Right. But
you're
kind of digging into the wrestling mat and you're having to strengthen all those muscles in your feet, and it would always work. I would always end up getting better doing that, you know, which is absolutely amazing.
Well, there's another thing you do when you run on a wrestling mat. You don't massively overstride and heel strike. because that just doesn't feel right. So just getting your feet underneath your body, that's, you know, the first thing. And then everything can follow after that.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. Well, let's talk real quick about, I want to know, I love to study people that are highly successful. And, you know, you are, you're still sprinting, right? Like you said, at 45, you started sprinting, you started being a competitor. What is your daily routine, your non-negotiables look like when it comes to, like, you know, eating and sleeping and those type of things, right? So your success.
So I'm 59 and almost 59 and a half. And one of the challenges of being 59 and a half is that I can't do the kind of volume of training that I would love to do, that I imagine doing. Basically, I've got one speed day in me a week. And then, you know, arguably I could do a tempo day, but what's the point really? If you're sprinting, you just want to practice running fast. And so that's a bit of a challenge. So the biggest thing that I'm doing when I'm not on the track is just working out and trying to do plyos and really get that posterior chain going. So I've got a home gym that I set up. I'm embarrassed when I say this, but I'll say it anyway, but we bought a house and it has a media room in the basement. So that's where the TV is. My wife and I, we're one TV family. So that's where the TV is. And we also, I got a hot tub, and cause in Colorado, you kind of have to, it's the law. And so to get either into the media room or out to the hot tub, I've got to walk through my home gym. So a couple times a day, I do something. And at the very least, I do something. I also have a broken spine. So that's relevant for this. I have a reverse hyperextension machine that I use. I've got a machine that I use for doing Nordic hamstring curl. And I'm going to see if I can, I'm going to show this video if I can. So I do Nordic hamstring curls, and I want to show this off. Not to, you know, like, go, hey, look how cool I am, although that's part of it, but mostly to say, hey, look what's possible if you decide to work it. And so let's see, hold on. Let's see if you can see this.
Nice. No bounce, no hands.
Yeah. So that's 59 and change, you know, all the way down, all the way back. It took me a couple months to get there, but, you know, I get on the Nordic hamstring. I've got a 45 degree hyper that I use as well. I've got my rack. And then I also do a couple of vanity workouts. So last night was my bench press workout, which is an insane thing that I got from this guy named Nick Nilsson. So basically pick a 10 rep max and do a set of three, rest for 10 seconds and keep doing sets of three with 10 second rest until that last one is, like, you know, really hard, that last rep, then go to sets of two with 10 second rest, then eventually sets of one with 10 second rest. And when that one rep is hard, rest for 20 seconds and go back to three. And then two, and then one, and just keep going for like 40 minutes. And the first time I did that, it's insane. Like the last 20 minutes just sets one with 30 seconds of rest, or actually no, 20 seconds, just like, you know, 1, 20, 1, 20, 1, 20. And the first time I did this, I emailed this guy, Nick, and I said, dude, I got veins popping out where I didn't even know I had veins. So I do that, and I'll do the flip side. I'll do a pull version of that, and I'll do a deadlift version of that. So that's those are fun. And then again, the plyo stuff, doing real plyos. So I'm doing, you know, stepping off a 12 or 18 inch box and then jumping onto a 30 inch or 34 inch box. And I do a bunch of those. And I mean, whatever crossed my mind, I've got enough stuff in my home gym that every day I'll find something that I find entertaining. Oh, I've got a fan bike. There we go. I've got a fan bike. And so I'll jump on there and do just a couple of, you know, serious all out sprints, like really high intensity interval stuff. So 20 seconds on, 20 seconds off until I fall over, which is usually only about four of those. But you know, again, just anything to keep going.
Yeah. I have a little PTSD from Airdynes. We did a lot of hardcore training on them.
Yeah, those things are a beast, man. I mean, it's really unpleasant. But I realized, you know, what I realized, I used to, when I lived in Boulder, I rode my bike everywhere, and we moved outside of town. And it occurred to me that my general conditioning had gone down because I just wasn't on my bike all the time, even though cycling and sprinting are not a great match necessarily, but my general conditioning was off. So that's why I got the fan bike, because I just needed to do something for more general conditioning.
Now, what about recovery? So you're already doing lots of grounding, right? Walking around barefooted. What about, you know, any cold type therapy, heat, cold, red light, anything you do special?
You know, I try to do as little as I can get away with, because most of the research is saying anything that interferes with that mild inflammation is actually interfering with the ability for the body to recover properly. So I mean, I have a hot tub that I'm in at least once a day, but not for recovery, just, you know, like that's how I like to start or end my day. And next to the hot tub, I've got like this inflatable pool thing. It's not a pool. It's like, it's about, I don't know, maybe 30 inch or 24 inches in diameter, 30 inches high. It's designed, if you don't have a bathtub, you put it in your shower and fill it up. Well, I put it out with the hot tub and I filled it up with ice water. Now it's cold enough that I don't need ice water at night. It's cold enough that when I get into that thing, it's like, you know, 45 degrees. So I do it not for the cold therapy part, but I just like, after getting out of the hot tub, I really like jumping in cold water. I was a polar bear for 17 years in a row, just, you know, jumping into icy water every January 1st. And so I just enjoy doing it, but I don't stay in there forever. And in fact, the research that I saw, you don't want to acclimate to the cold. You want to get in there. As soon as you start shivering, get out. As soon as you stop shivering, get back in, because you know, acclimating is the problem. And so I do that just because I enjoy it, not so much for, you know, recovery per se.
Yeah. I do the same thing. I do some cold therapy literally just because I like the way it makes me feel. So
yeah.
Yeah.
Especially in the summer, man, it's just the best.
All right. So I believe everybody has giftings, some sort of genius. And I don't want you to be humble. You know, when I ask you that, what is your genius, man? What is your, you know, what are a couple of your giftings?
The thing that I'm really good at, there's two things that I'm good at. One is pattern recognition. And the other, there's three actually. The second thing is identifying what the underlying common factor or true thing is. So like when people, you know, people are always looking for an answer for something. And I tend to like look to see if there's an answer underneath that by usually checking to see if their answer can be proven false. It's like, I know everyone believes this. Let's see if that's not true. And if not, or if at least the opposite is as likely as the original, then there's going to be something underneath that's good. But the other thing is that I'm really, really good at identifying, at using both of those to help with movement patterns. So I've taught everything from running to gymnastics, to Tai Chi, to yoga, to Zen archery, to, to tap dancing, pretty much any physical thing. I'm really good at identifying what that essential thing is that makes it work. And then finding ways to help people adapt to that or learn that new thing, usually with unusual cues that no one had thought of. Like my favorite, here's an example of looking for the underlying truth. You go to a high school track meet in particular, and you look at the sprinters, and then you'll hear all the parents yelling, get your knees up. It's like, oh, no, it doesn't work that way. The fact that your knees come up is the effect of you hitting the ground with a lot of force at the right angle. It's not something that you actively do. By the time parents are yelling knees up, it's too late. They're not able to apply force into the ground at the right angle and the right amount of force to get that knee to come up reflexively, if you will, or reactively, if you will. And so you start looking at what's going on there. Why are they just getting weaker? And sometimes just because, you know, you can't keep applying force indefinitely. It's just the way it is. So identifying that, or there's a variation on that. One of my best friends, the guy who actually suggested I run barefoot, we met because we had the same track coach. And I noticed one day I wasn't doing certain drills and warmups that the coach was recommending because I thought they were completely useless. And I noticed this other guy wasn't doing them either. And I said, why aren't you doing these drills? He goes, because they're useless. I said, you're my friend. So, you know, just looking for these things, like as a sprinter doing A skips and B skips and C skips, the way most running coaches teach those and the way most runners do them, it's just like a hip warm-up drill instead of what it really is, which is taking a specific phase of the sprint cycle and focusing on that to build in a movement pattern into your brain when you're not going full speed and your brain is sort of shut off and you're on autopilot. And so if you're not using those drills to simulate running, it's a waste. And people don't know that, because what happens in coaching is people just, they often, you've probably seen this, they just repeat something that someone said to them, but that doesn't mean it's actually right or applicable to that person you're talking to right now. So last story about that, I had a friend and a coach who I worked with, who at one point he said, when you're in the air in this one drill, you need to get your hips over your feet. I said, how am I supposed to do that? I'm in the middle of the air. You can't just rearrange your body that way. What you're telling me, and you don't know it, is that I didn't take off in a way that got my hips over my feet. And he said, oh, yeah. I said, yeah, see, someone just told you hips over your feet, and you were a brilliant, brilliant sprinter, and you just figured out what they meant without the two of you ever realizing that what he said had nothing to do with what you were doing, but what you ended up with was what he was going for. And he didn't know that.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I'm almost the exact same way. So in coaching wrestling, I'm very, I don't want to use the term outside the box, but different than a lot of coaches. But I've noticed, like you said, a lot of coaches coach exactly how they were coached, right?
Right.
So if it was awesome, cool, keep it. But have you evaluated it? Have you actually looked at it and seen, is there a more efficient way to do this? Is this even make sense at all? You know, and if it does, figure out a way that
here's a version of this. Imagine for the fun of it that you came up as a coach and you just happen to have brilliantly gifted natural athletes under your command. You could say almost anything to them and they'd be good, you know? And if you say things to them and they're brilliantly gifted, when you get other guys who show up who aren't brilliantly gifted, everything you said to that first group will probably not apply at all to the second group and vice versa, you know? So it's the reason that I say Jack Leonard is such a brilliant coach, again, is he figured out what you could do. I mean, our gymnastics team in junior high and high school, I don't remember if we were undefeated or not for 6 years. I think maybe we lost one meet in 6 years. And so we were pretty popular and people wanted to be part of our team. And people would come in who you would say had no discernible skill, talent, or coordination. And at the end of 3 or 6 years, these guys were really good at the thing they could be good at.
Yeah.
And that's a whole different mindset to be willing to experiment and figure out what works and what doesn't work for that person, different from that next person. I mean, here's something, a testament to Jack. When he was coaching Olympians, he met a Russian coach who said, you know, cross your or interlace your fingers and see which finger, which thumb is on top. And that's going to tell you which direction you should be doing a round off, because you can either start with your left hand down or your right hand down. And he noticed that like half the girls on his team were doing the opposite of what this coach suggested was for real. And it made sense to him that if you're naturally kind of leaning in one direction or another, you want to go in that direction. So he says to these, you know, some of them future Olympians, for the next 2 months, we're going to go back to the basics and just do round offs again. Well, you can imagine that their parents were not happy and they weren't happy either. He did it to me when I was in going into high school. He said, you know, you got to go back to the basics and do this one thing all summer long. That's the only move you're going to do for an entire summer. And I was, of course, livid. And at the end of that summer, I was so much better than I was in the beginning. Same thing that happened with these girls he was coaching. After not very long, maybe 6 weeks, they all adapted and they were suddenly so much better. And for someone to take high performing athletes and in the middle of, you know, a big deal part of their life, go, we got to back up. If we don't do this, it's going to be a problem. I mean, that takes a lot of cojones.
Yeah. Well, I don't know the young lady's name, the US hurdler that won the Olympics this year. Her coach did that to her last year during the indoor season. He said, she's a right leg lead on hurdles. And he said, you're going to lead with your left leg. And I guess she just got crushed her first couple of meets and she was frustrated. Yeah. And like, what are we doing? Why are we doing this? And then now all of a sudden here she was, she wins the Olympics. And she said, it was literally one of the best things that she's ever done in training.
Yeah. Yeah. It's an amazing thing when there's someone who is both that confident and that flexible in their thinking about coaching. And then working with an athlete who's willing to, you know, put up with it instead of going, I'm out of here. I mean, it's a great thing.
Absolutely. So, all right, Stephen, well, I always like to end our podcast episodes like this. You can answer one of these or you can answer all three, right? I want and expound upon it as much as you want. I want you to tell me about a hero, hardship, and a highlight.
Wait, hold on. Hero, what was the next one?
A hero, hardship, highlight. Hero, hardship, highlight. One okay. Or a little of each?
I'm going to do a little of the first two.
Okay.
And I'm going to give you something surprising on the last one. So I don't do heroes because I don't know those people. And yeah. So there's people whose accomplishments I've admired and who, you know, it'd be fun if I could run like that guy or lift like that guy or whatever, but that's it. I don't care after that. I've never met them. I don't know what they're like in their private life. I don't put people on pedestals. In fact, it's sort of a joke. I had a girlfriend who said, if we're ever at an event where there's some famous guy doing something, and then afterwards people are milling about and I can't find you, you're hanging out with the famous guy and he's treating you like a friend. I go, yeah, because I'm treating him like a friend. Yeah. I'm not treating him like, you know, I'm not putting him on a pedestal. Hardship. The best thing I can say is maybe I have a brain disorder. I literally can't think of anything that happened in the past in that context. It might've been difficult at the time, but I don't see it as a hardship now. And I literally can't even remember an example of one of those. So it's kind of like my wife said to me one day, you treat people like they're your friend, even if they have done things that have screwed you over horribly in business, for example. And it's your most confusing and endearing trait because they don't understand why you're not mad at them. And I go, it wasn't personal. And so, they, other than the fact that they acted stupidly under this circumstance, why would I think anything differently? And, it wasn't about me, it was about them. So no harm, no foul. But I've literally had people who I see them like coming towards me on the sidewalk and I'm ready to say hi. They had done like cost me tens of thousands of dollars from something dumb that they had done. And they'll see me and then like go to the other side of the street, which I think is really funny. It's like, I just want to say hi, man. No harm, no foul. Anyway, so those are hero and hardship highlights. Starting this business with my wife. I mean, we've been doing this for almost 12 years and it's the most satisfying thing I've ever experienced. She is a brilliant, wonderful, just incredible human being. And she has just flourished. I'm the product marketing guy. She's the operations finance person. And watching how what she has become has been the most satisfying thing in the world. And building this with her is infinitely more satisfying than if I had done it with anybody else or alone. It just, it's made us closer. And I'm just unbearably grateful that 20 something years ago, she decided to be my friend long before we ever became a couple. And then at some point decided I was okay to go out with. And if it weren't for her, this definitely wouldn't have happened. And she thinks the same of me. We respect each other's skills and we know what swim lanes to be in and what swim lanes to not be in. And that's what's been one of the things that's really been integral in us being able to achieve what we have so far, which in our mind is still just barely getting going. We have our plans are very big and this is just the beginning.
Which just remind me, that's beautiful, by the way. I love that. But just remind me. So whenever you buy a pair of shoes from Zero, you get an email from you and it has your phone number. Yeah. I was like sitting in class and the email came through and I looked and I was like, I'm going to go outside in a minute on my break and I'm going to text or I'm going to call just to see if that's really your number. I didn't, but I thought about it. Is it?
It is. Yeah. Yep. I put my personal phone number in a couple of places saying, look, if you have an issue, we're here, we're available. And I have maybe not many people take me up on it, but I have maybe three or four phone calls a week that start like this. Hi, this is Steven. Oh my God. And so people don't believe that I would have done that.
Yeah, that is awesome. I assumed it was, and I was going to test it, but I decided not to. All right. Last question. You got a rack of shoes behind you for those who are listening and won't be seeing this on a video. All right. What are your favorite Zero shoes beside your bare feet?
If you had whatever one I happen to be, grabbed that morning. The shoe that I wear the most often though, actually, is this one. This is the Speed Force. It's the lightest, closest to barefoot shoe that we've made. I developed this with a guy who had been at Nike for 30 years and we're working directly with Bill Bowerman most of the time. And he's a fan of old shoe designs that people used to make 500,000 years ago because they had to use simple designs and simple manufacturing. And so this came out of that. It was just three pieces of fabric that we sewed together. And it was just a really comfortable slipper. And I went, wait, if I take a sole from our do-it-yourself sandal kit and attach it to this thing, that's going to feel great. And I had one other runner who was with me when I thought of this. And we just tried these things out. And it was incredible. It's like the closest thing to barefoot we had found. So I train in these and I compete in these. I don't wear spikes. I'm wearing just, the Zero shoe Speed Force. And from my testing, it's no better or worse than wearing a spike, which is another interesting thing about finding those essential truths. It's like everyone says, sprinting spikes evolved because they help people run faster. No. Actually, in fact, I met a guy, I haven't met him. I met this guy's daughter, which sounds weird when I say it that way. I met a woman whose dad, let's try that. Her dad has the world record in the 100-yard dash. And he has the world record still from 1971, because after that, they started doing 100 meters and they stopped running 100 yards. If you look at the shoes that he was wearing, they are certainly no high tech, whatever the way you see now. And just to put things into the ultimate context, his world record was running a 9 second flat 100 yards. For anyone who knows sprinting, that means he probably would have run about a 9,800 meters, which means he would have won the Olympics this year.
That's amazing. That's amazing. Yeah. With all the training techniques and the shoe wear technology and all that stuff we have. Yeah, that is absolutely, yeah. Which is,
yeah.
So, all right, where can we, and I'm going to put, I'll put your social media and I will put your website in the show notes, but where can we find you guys on social media?
Thanks. You can all, of course, find us at zeroshoes.com, or if your computer accidentally changed the X to the Z and you get Zero Shoes, that'll still get to us. And if you're on social media, find us at Zero Shoes or /Zero Shoes, wherever you happen to at or slash.
All right. Awesome. Well, Stephen, man, thank you so much for your time, for your wisdom.
Pleasure.
I love it, man. I love this unique perspective and what you guys are doing with your company. So everybody listen and make sure you check out the website. Grab yourself a pair of the shoes. And this has been another episode of Coach P's Perspective. May God bless you, smile upon you, and give you peace. Till next time, we're out. Hey there, friends. If you are a wrestler, jiu-jitsu athlete, grappler of any sort, MMA fighter, weightlifter, any of the above, I want you to go check out my friends at terragrappler.com. These are hands down the best wrestling shoes I've worn. I've been competing my entire life. I wear these to wrestle in. I wear these while I'm weightlifting. Pretty much any kind of training that I do, I'm rocking my Terra Grapplers. You can go to terragrappler.com, and if you use the code COACHCP10, you'll get $10 off of your order. The link is also in the show notes, so go check out my friends at terragrappler.com.
Podcast complete, now me working overtime. I'm just a vessel for the spirit. When it's in me, then I shine. If the clay gets broken, he makes some whole new pottery. Repent for your sins, tell Satan to stay up off of me. Dip with a new step, CSL rep, pop, lock and rock. Coach P, who never stops.